Welcome to Studio 86, in-depth discussions with RIT newsmakers. Come on inside.
Welcome inside Studio 86. I'm Mike Saffron of RIT University News. In the studio today, Michael Reardon, who is a professor in RIT's School of Print Media and also co-director of RIT's Open Publishing Lab, what's known as the OPL, the Open Publishing Lab. And joining in the questioning is Kelly Downs of RIT University News. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
We just held RIT's second annual Imagine RIT Innovation and Creativity Festival recently here on campus, and you had a project as part of the festival, Innovation News, where you produced five on-the-spot newspapers. And tell me a little bit more about that. How did that go? This was the, I believe, third time that you produced Innovation News as part of an event here on campus.
Sure. At last year's Innovation Fest, the first one, we rolled out the project based on the idea that we wanted to try to get a nearly instantaneous newspaper out. We were approached to do a newspaper, and we said it's at that point it was 2008. We should be able to do one nearly on the hour. So the model was built last year. It's been evolving since. This year is now the fourth time that we've run a version of it, so it's volume four, and we were able to get five editions out on a nearly hourly basis. That first one, we cheated just a little bit to make sure that people had it as they started their day, so we pre-wrote some of the content the evening and the morning of, and then as that first one rolled out, Dessler's speech ended with about 10 minutes. That first copy hit the streets, so people started to see some images from that first, the opening words of Dessler to kick off the festival. And then after that, the next edition came out shortly after, an hour later, and steadily throughout the day. The project itself brings together a lot of different things. It brings together students from programs in liberal arts as writers, programs in photography, the photojournalism program, and then the School of Print Media students to help actually do both the printing and distribution, and then the Open Publishing Lab, which we'll explain a little more later, as a cross-disciplinary research lab, brings together students from all sorts of corners of the campus. But the model itself, in terms of the print model, is the part that impresses people usually because they can see it and touch it. But in the back end, what's happening is actually much more robust and much faster. Writers from the field log in to the server through a software called Drupal. Drupal then handles all the text-based content, waits for the image content to be uploaded from a separate place. And the moment each story is brought in and edited, it is immediately published to the web, sent out to our RSS feed. That feed then immediately goes out to a Google Earth install and starts to pop up in an interactive map of the campus. Simultaneously, this year we introduced a Twitter feed to actually do the kind of the backstory, the behind the scenes, what happens in the newsroom. Last year we did it by way of webcam. This year we thought, well, Twitter seems a more interesting way to bring it to more people. So the sidebar of the newspaper included that constant Twitter feed from edition two on.
What sort of response have you gotten from this since the festival?
The initial response was, as always, great. The big surprise was the fact that people were asking for it. That was the biggest surprise. Last year we launched it, it was almost this arrogant, we can do this, and we drove ourselves to make it happen. And then we did it again in the fall for the Brick City events, and we did it again, a special edition for RIT Hockey. And we integrated content actually from University News as well as Sports Zone to make that edition happen. But by the time we got to this fest, everyone remembered it from last festival. And so we literally had people coming to us. They were finding us over in Building 7, where the news was being produced. They were finding us in our booth in the OPL lab. They were recognizing one or two people from last year going, where is it? I'm looking for the latest edition. And we didn't see that coming at all. So we ran the first edition a little bit short, figuring that we wanted to make sure that we ran out and we could make more. It's an on-demand model. We ran out immediately. We sent out our distribution team, and I had a team of students, the GET fraternity. It's part of the school. And it's a co-ed fraternity. It's an honors one. And they said, how can we help you work on this project? And said, if you could help with the distribution, especially early in the day, that'd be terrific. So about eight students from that group went out, and they distributed by hand all around the campus. Most of them didn't even make it to the WOW Center because people saw it. They wanted it immediately. So they were coming back within minutes. I need another 100. So it was this kind of thing that was, I think, the greatest surprise and maybe success early on, was the fact that we got that first edition out. Dessler had it in his hands. There's a great little, if you go to YouTube, there's a great little snippet on that captured by Associate Dean Frank Cost. But there was just a general excitement. And then throughout the day was actually, the pressure became greater. They wanted the next one. So last year we set the bar. This year they simply expected it, that in many respects, you know, both a success and a challenge that was unexpected.
How many copies ultimately did you end up printing out that day?
We did 5 editions. We printed the first 4. The 5th edition hit right about the 4 o'clock hour, so we printed a proof one. We decided not to really distribute it out widely because there was no great need. I honestly lost track of how many hundreds got printed. The first run of the first edition, I set a clean limit of 500, and that was based on 1 ream of paper. Get it out the door. While they're running, we'll keep printing more. By the end, if I had to do a pretty quick estimate, edition 1 probably had about 1,200 to 1,300 copies printed. Second edition was probably about 1,000. Third edition was probably about 800 to 1,000. We started to scale it down as the day went on. But the funny thing was, as we had local stacks within Building 7 where the printing was happening, and at the OPL booth, I kept getting phone calls from the students' booth. Professor Reardon, we're out again. So it seemed unlike last year where we had short stacks of a couple of them left in different places. This year I literally couldn't print enough.
Can you talk a little bit about the various applications that could be used for Innovation News and in other ways? I know we've talked about FEMA and disaster relief.
Well, the model itself, it's a web-based model for production. So in the sense that all story content is ported through a central website, and again, that's powered by an open source software called Drupal. Then we used a third-party software called Zynet, and Zynet is an asset management software used for other parts of production. We used it locally here at RIT because we have it, and it works well. But what that does is standardize the images that go into the system. So we do the handoff to Drupal for web-based publishing or prepare images to come back down to the print model. They're pre-managed. The model of the overall news, though, says that everything goes through a central website. It's ported out as XML-based content, so it's highly structured and ready to be dropped into something else. Ours has a template that goes to Adobe InDesign, but we could easily make it into a template for many other aspects. And other work inside the Open Publishing Lab does that. So the applications we saw going out is, well, we have a web-based model, so that means anyone that can get to the internet that has the ability to upload content, write standard blog-based input, because that's really what Drupal software is. It's functionally robust and very customizable blog software. I can shoot a JPEG image, or I can bring in motion media. This year, we also have 4 videos for the first time that ports through. The model is portable out. I'll explain it this way. The students who were authors for us in the fall, when we did our second volume of the news, received effectively no training. We sent an email, log on to this website, take a look, put in your story this way. And it was headline story identification so we could track it internally, and then the actual body of the story. No one had a problem with it. No one did a learning curve. It was a very straightforward piece. Our editors last year on the first edition, one of them was not a very tech-savvy woman, extremely good editor, but she's like, I don't know about this web stuff. And we showed it to her. She goes, that's it? Where's the rest? The model's built on this premise that everyone should do what they do best, and the technology that they interact with should be minimal. It's just, I see a web page. I understand what this does. I'm a photographer. I understand a digital image. Here's my compact flashcard. Show me where to put my content. And so the idea of taking that model out, the system is highly intelligent and allows people to build out. So for the FEMA model, we said, well, if we're able to knock out the news from the time the last story comes in is edited, we can get out to a print edition inside 15 to 20 minutes. Well, then in an automated way, anyone should be able to do that. So the model becomes portable in that respect. In terms of enabling people to self-publish, it becomes really the same thing. So that's a self-publishing for a purpose for maybe getting information out about important events. The model we have ends up with a print-ready PDF in the end within minutes. So that would go to any, the first local copy shop that can print the darn thing. I can take that, print it, and start to distribute. And so that's the model that we looked at. Looking at the model with other groups, our partnership with the Photojournalism School, we talked about the idea of people out in the field publishing their own content up, getting into the system. So we're maybe not going the full cycle out to print, but just having it in a centralized website and ready for publishing. It gives them a very easy input. It's automatically formatted and ready.
Now, Mike had mentioned that you're co-director of the Open Publishing Lab.
Sure.
If you could just talk a little bit about what the Open Publishing Lab is.
The Open Publishing Lab itself started about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now. And what it is, it's a very high-energy place. We do a lot of stuff. It's a cross-disciplinary research lab. It's almost exclusively undergraduate-powered. What makes it unusual about it, at least in this campus, and I think in many, is the fact that we rely on and students from different parts of the campus. The School of Print Media's publishing program is where it starts because that's where we're housed. But it's immediately after that where we work, and we have students inside the lab from design, software engineering, information technology, industrial design made a very powerful cameo. So we're reaching out to see essentially who wants to play in our sandbox and start looking at publishing solutions, whether it's the development of software, the linkages of systems. The primary mission is to be open source or head towards open source wherever possible. So, for instance, in this year's Innovation News, we used Adobe InDesign because it's a very powerful tool and standard for our industry. But the long-term model is to migrate that forward to an open source model. The other aspects of what the lab tries to do in general are all tied to that. We're trying to simply make it better. So to that, there's a lot of energy that builds back and forth. The students, although we pay them as researchers, nearly all of them put in extra hours just because they want to. There's a lot of giving that goes back and forth between the faculty, the staff, and the students that work on the different projects. And that's where the excitement builds. Everyone just wants to just, how can I help? How can I put more into this? And then we've started to look at how will this impact the curriculum across the campus. So, for instance, the Innovation News is just one example. Started last year for the first time. And then as we struggled to get enough photographers, enough writers, and so on, over the summer, it became part of the curriculum upstairs in the photojournalism program. And then by the fall, the liberal arts school started to participate much more directly to make sure that their writers were writing for the Innovation News. And that trend has continued here through the spring. So it started as almost a research-based model to look at solutions, has very quickly migrated into how does this impact the curriculum? How does this get to the infrastructure of what we do on a daily basis at RIT?
How do you think that it's impacted your teaching as the curriculum has to change, as more and more people come to want this instantaneous information and news?
It's impacted my teaching profoundly in the sense that if you look at the history of at least the School of Print Media, in the time I've been here, I'm in my 12th year, I've watched a wholesale change of the faculty and a nearly wholesale change of what the importance of print is and what the emphasis of publishing has been. We look at the recent decline of newspapers and in the past year, the suddenly rapid decline and closure, this idea of you're separating content from form. How I get the content out is functionally changing. So the timing for the lab is either about 6 months late or right on time. But in terms of taking a look at that, how do I start to migrate that to hit what people actually need? Relative to what I teach primarily in the areas of production workflow. How do I build things to the endpoint that people want? So how do I get the colors to meet their expectations? How do I get the content formatted in the manner that meets what everyone actually needs? So the work we do in the lab immediately informs the curriculum that I teach, and then vice versa. So there's this constant feedback loop that goes back and forth in what I teach and what the other faculty members associated with the lab also teach. And what we're finding is we actually reach out to other faculty members on the campus. It's basically a very high-energy, otherwise organic model of the curriculum informing the lab and the lab informing the curriculum. What can you do? And it's exciting. It's basically fun. We joke about it. If it's not fun, we don't want to do it. And frankly, you know, it's exhausting at times. And I saw you during the Innovation Festival this year, and I looked tired. And most of my students looked tired because we were up to ridiculous hours on Friday to guarantee all the components were there. But no one was sorry. No one had any regrets at all about that. We were just simply excited to make it happen. We had our weekly meeting just an hour before this interview, and they were still buzzing. This work, we had a couple small problems. Oh, well, these great things worked. It's this ongoing excitement that built.
Michael, what is next for Innovation News? Will you be doing more issues for Brick City Homecoming coming up in the fall?
Sure. There's two things that are upcoming. One is we're seeking funding from the outside to keep the development going. We kind of built this one on shoestring and bubblegum. So to just be able to get the continued funding and look for those applications going outward. The other piece is to tie much more directly to the newspaper industry to solve some of their more pressing needs. So we're looking at different models for the overall news. Regards to the RIT campus, we're going to keep it going. We've got meetings in the next 2 weeks with most of the people that worked on the project to look at the better way to run it. 4 issues in, I think we know what works and what doesn't. The technology is great. The communication strategies, how we actually get people involved properly, make people aware of what's happening. is probably the next big development. But you'll see it, I'll guarantee it, in the fall at Brick City. And we're looking to keep it going at least once every quarter.
Michael Reardon, thanks for coming into Studio 86.
Thank you.
Tune in next time for another in-depth discussion from Studio 86. Studio 86 is recorded live in Building 86 on the RIT campus and is produced by RIT University News Services.